Blog Talk Radio.
Like a bird in the sky, I wish I could be free. And today we are Ralph Pointer, What's Happening Tuesday, January 10th, 2017, in the nation that is becoming ungovernable. And our news analysis tonight will be emphasizing how and why the Democratic Party lost the election. And it was an interesting analysis by Chris Hedges of the latest spoof going on about the Russians compromising Trump as another example of how the nation is becoming ungovernable. And we will be discussing that. However, I want to welcome our usual suspects, Sister Lynn, Brother Larry, Brother Tariq, Brother Tom, and of course, here we go with our brother, Ralph Pointer.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters, meaning those with an agenda, a like agenda, to make the world a more just and better place. And where do we start? We start where we are, at home. Now, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black. Move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And speaking of time, what time and what period are we in presently in this place we call America? America is suffering from the J. Edgar Hoover syndrome, that is, spy and lie. And we've heard so much about this hacking by the Russian government. And we've been told MI6, the outstanding British information organization, the MI6, the spy organization. Have we forgotten about Yellow Cake? Have we forgotten Saddam Hussein? Have we forgotten Omar Gaddafi? Forget about Russian hacking. And have we forgotten about the Democratic Party in New York keeping people from voting in the Democratic primary? And that's just a picture, a slight glimpse into all of the lies that are being told to confuse the American public, and the American public is confused. The Democratic Party lost because they got Obama in on the race issue. Black people voted for Obama in droves, and that was their insurance to keep black people quiet, who might have been political, to keep liberals quiet, who might have been political, and Obama went and did the corporate American thing that did not and will not help the American people. And so Bernie Sanders, they lied and called him a socialist. I don't want to disabuse anyone. Bernie Sanders was never a socialist. But what he was too much for the corporate party that the Democrats have. They didn't want, you know, what Obama had promised, single-payer health care. Bernie said he was going straight ahead with that single-payer health care. That was too much. And he said other things about education that was too much for the corporate party that the Democratic Party is under Hillary Clinton. And so they excluded Bernie, all kind of tricks. And Hillary lost. And now we have Mr. Trump. But one of the funny things is, talking about being ungovernable, Mr. Trump has stated recently that he likes Snowden. He likes the people who are bringing us information that we would never get otherwise. I don't know if Mr. Trump is going to be consistent with supporting whistleblowers, but you see how the mix is getting, what did they say, funnier and funnier, stranger and stranger. But I like Lynn Stewart's statement when she says, now we have a target. Mr. Obama is gone. Let's hope. And if I were a theist, I would say, let us hope and pray that black people and progressives do not go back to sleep. But then we have to question, who is a progressive? When we see some of these people screaming, we have Trump. And I say, and I tell some of my neighbors who are immigrants, white and Mexican and black, who say, I'm afraid, Ralph, I'm afraid. And I says, I go back again to Sister Lynn Stewart, a statement she made the night of the election. She says, well, I'm going to sleep. I'm not going to wait results, because tomorrow morning, whoever is elected, nothing will have changed. So I tell them, listen, nothing is changing except maybe the rhetoric. There will be no wall. Mexico isn't paying for it. You saw that. It became a fence the day after the election, 2 days after the election. It became a hedgerow. And as Mr. Bloomberg said, and I don't like to quote Mr. Bloomberg, he says, I wish they would stop talking about immigration in Washington because nothing is going to be done. And I've heard other people in New York say, if they were to put the Mexican laborers out, then the wealthy in New York who abuse and use the cheap labor would riot in the streets. And so, with that said, I'm going to allow others who are on the line. We have so many people who would like to chime in on this. Give us your opinions. Betty?
Well, I neglected to mention Sister Ann, who is ever faithful and always with us. But we will open, as usual, with our brother from out west.
Central,
pardon me. Got to get my geography straight. And that is Brother Larry Pinckney. Before I do that, I just want to comment again on this article by Chris Hedges. He said, well, then what is the agenda for them attacking Trump in this way? It's to set him up for impeachment as a buffoon of the Russian people. And then the second agenda is to make sure the mythology of the two-party system is maintained because the corporations need it. And the third and final agenda to me is the scariest. It's to shut down alternative information channels in America, i.e. Blog Talk Radio, i.e. WBAI, all the more reason to fight for your public access channels. Brother Larry, in the house.
Thank you so much, my sister. Always, always, my greetings to you, Sister Professor Betty Davis. My greetings to our stalwart people's lawyer. No matter what they call her, we know what you are, and that's Lynn Stewart, all power to the people. My greetings to Joel, to Tom. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. And, of course, I hope Sister Ann Lamb will be joining us. I don't know exactly what was said about her, but, hey, looking forward to it, whichever way it goes. And, of course, Brother Ralph Pointer, what can I say to you with your bad self? Mm-hmm. Go ahead. All right, all foul to the people. Let me just get right into it as quickly and as succinctly as I possibly can. You know, I read an article and actually saw a new so-called news conference that kind of, well, it sort of tickled my fancy, if you'll forgive that expression. Tickled my fancy because you know what? You know, my brother Ralph mentioned how Mr. Trump, with what he had to say about Snowden, right? But guess what? Sarah Palin. Do you all remember Sarah Palin?
Oh, yeah.
Sarah Palin came out in writing and verbally apologizing. Now, check this out. To Julian Assange. Sarah Palin apologized to Julian Assange and said that the views that she had held before were incorrect, that he had in fact, and I'm talking Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, obviously, that the views that Sarah Palin had had, this is what she said, were incorrect, that she had, quote, grown to understand how important what he and WikiLeaks as a whole had done, how important it is to the quote-unquote American people and indeed the people of the world. So we are living in very strange times, my brothers and sisters. My sisters and brothers. They say that politics makes for strange bedfellows. But what I say is that principles never make for strange bedfellows. Because if we stick to our principles, i.e., what we truly believe principledly, then we don't have to worry about being in bed with anybody strange. Okay? excuse my metaphor, but I just had to say that. Now, what I want to get on immediately is what I always harp on and what we always harp on, and that is our political prisoners. You know, and I may have said this before, but I'm sick and tired of hearing people whine and whine and whine. You know what? Barack Obama, drone man, Mr. Hope and Change, has prosecuted more whistleblowers than any other U.S. president combined. Drone man has droned more people, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow, than any other president combined. You know what? Our political prisoners have been in prison for decades, 35, 40, 45 years. I am sick and tired of hearing people, and I'm going to say it, whether people get offended or not, I hope they do not, but if they do, so be it. Suddenly, Black Lives Matter, quote unquote. Tell me about the Black Lives of Mark Clark. Tell me about the Black Lives of Fred Hampton. Tell me about the Black Life of little Bobby Hutton. Tell me about, I can go on and on and on. The point is that our political prisoners, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow, have been languishing in the gulags of the United States for many decades. And I'm sick and tired of people acting like when they were born that that was the most prominent and important date on earth. It was not. This struggle has been going on for many decades. If we cannot, as intelligent, honest, conscious people, if we cannot, and that's of all colors, if we cannot support our political prisoners, then you know what? Hang it up and go away. Because our political prisoners, whether it's Seth Hayes, whether it's Mumia Abdul-Jamal, whether it's Leonard Peltier, et cetera, they have been fighting for our survival, for us, for all of us. And they didn't need no Black Lives Matter to tell them that the lives of all oppressed black, white, brown, red, and yellow people matter. We've known that for many decades, and that is why they have been struggling for many decades, and that is why they have been held in U.S. prison gulags for many decades. It's time to get real. It really is time to get real. Past time. Our political prisoners should be first and foremost, that is to say, the freeing of our political prisoners, of the women and men, of the men and women who have given their lives, their livelihood, their family, to everything. For whom? For us. So, having said that, trying to calm myself down, I will say that we have an obligation to stay on course. Our political prisoners have been true to the struggle for all of us for so very many, many years. At the very least, we must be and can be true to them. I'm going to end by saying, as I always begin, the struggle will succeed without a doubt. All power to the people. Thank you, my beautiful sisters and brothers.
Thank you so much for that, Larry Pinkney. I'm going to have naturally Lynn Stewart come in and follow right behind that discussion because I think it fits. Lynn, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. And I'm going
to very good. Glad to know that because we've been having phone troubles here. Well, good. I want to start out by asking Betty if she'll tell us where the Chris Hedges article is because I'm a great fan of Chris Hedges also and would love to read it. So if she'll tell us that sometime before the end of the program, I would dearly love to hear it.
Lynn, Tom Syracuse is going to handle that, and he will be all over it. And so
okay,
just
great.
Tell us what you have to tell us, Lynn.
Thank you. I'm going to go forward then. I want to comment on the momentous Mumia decision today. And when I say it's momentous, because nobody wins a preliminary injunction. Only the most astute lawyers can get it past the state's mighty, mighty resources. So this is a true victory in the sense that we have won a great thing here. But we also, it is a limited thing because as I put out on my own little blog, that we have to remember that there are many, many poor people, many, many prisoners, many, many non-prisoners who also have Hep C and are not being treated because it costs too much. So that also must now become our concern. If we're going to get Mumia treatment for his Hep C, we must look beyond Mumia and also get it for all the others that suffer from this dreadful hepatitis, which must be cured because it is, talk about the usual suspects. Hep C is the usual suspect for anybody who has ever gone to jail. So let's hope we can do something with the Hep C. It is a momentous victory, though, and we have to thank the Liberation Law Firm and Bob Boyle and Bert Grody, a very wonderful victory. I also want to bring everybody's attention to an article that appears in this week's New Yorker. That would be January 16th. And it is an in-depth article about Mr. Woodfox. It's called Surviving Solitary, and it's about him more now that he has been released than he was when he was in. And anybody who wants to get a taste, a real feel for what it is like to be in these death camps, as Ralph has now insists we call them, and rightly so. This is about Albert Woodfox's death camp experience and also his getting out of the death camp. I want to read you the first paragraph for a taste. Last summer, 5 months after being released from prison, Albert Woodfox went to Harlem. It was there in 1969, during his last week of freedom, that he met members of the Black Panther Party for the first time. He had been mesmerized by the way they talked and moved. I had always sensed, even among the most confident black people, that their fear was right there at the top, ready to overwhelm them, he told me. It was the first time I'd ever seen black folk who were not afraid. And the reason why the Panthers were not afraid is because they knew and understood the right to self-defense. If you understand that you have an absolute right to defend yourself against all comers, no matter who, no matter if they come with a lynch rope or whether they come with guns or whether they come with more terrible weapons than those, but if you have the right to save your life, then you are indeed no longer afraid. And that is how he found those young Panthers up in Harlem back in 1969. And I hope that it is inspiring that we will reconstitute a similar group to those Panthers, and we will have them on the streets protecting the people, protecting the community. That is a reason to why we must get them out of jail, not that they will become militant combatants, but that they will be there as a resource for the militant combatants of tomorrow. I hope this with all my heart. Thanks, Ralph. Talk to you later.
Yes, thank you so much for that, Lynn. And that tells us that we must end the slavery of the political variety and have a demand. And our major demand, numero uno, number one, is our political prisoners. And I hope somebody will speak tonight about our Judy Clark. Even though many have criticized, I say she was out there doing. There is no criticism of those out there doing. And when they go to jail, as our dear past comrade Harvey Shapiro used to say, you have no obligation to tell the government the truth about anything. You are a warrior. You are a political prisoner, and your job is to get out any way you can. Harvey, wish you were here. He has passed on with so many of our brothers and sisters, Sundiata Sadiq, and I don't want to get into it, but I'm going to turn the mic back over to Betty Davis.
Before I introduce Sister Ann, I just want to commend her for the tremendous job that Jericho has been doing over these years, in particular last year, to free our political prisoners, and they give their entire life to this cause. She's going to be giving us an update on many of the political prisoners we don't often discuss. And before we get to that, I want to mention those of you who don't understand the importance of community control of schools. You should know that I believe our brother Jaleel, and can correct me if I'm wrong, has been transferred and censured. Why? Because he taught black history in the prison university after he had gotten permission to do so. They didn't like the truth he told. Does that say it all? The connection between our political prisoners and the truth. And if you want our youth to stop acting like they won't live past 25, they need to know the sacrifices that people like these black political prisoners did for them. When you tell them this history, it changes them. So Sister Ann, are you in the house?
I am in the house, and I am happy to be in the house. And I was going to do, as you said, a little bit more of a broader report. Unfortunately, my job has been insane, so I had literally walked in the door right before I got on the phone here. But it is true, yes, Jaleel has been moved to Southport. I called up there today. He's only allowed one visit a week, either Saturday or Sunday. And they are strict on the 7 days. Like, if you go on a Sunday, nobody can go till the next Sunday. And, you know, et cetera, you know. And also you can go on, like, an official holiday. They told me that as well. Because I asked what his status was, and they said, well, he's currently in orientation. I wasn't volunteering, like, why isn't he in the shoe? Because I'm sure that is where he is. So I hope to get up to see him soon. So that is true. That did happen. And as you said, it was exactly because he was teaching his course in black history. Actually, the people have read those recent articles in the New York Times all about racism in docs, racism in disciplinary hearings, and racism in parole hearings. There were two excellent New York Times articles on that. This was all very simultaneous with that. And I got two letters here from GLO. I won't get into reading the whole thing. He does have prisoners' legal services in Buffalo to work with him on the administrative appeal. Okay, so now they've moved him to Southport, which is near Elmira, which is not near Buffalo, right? So, you know, that might have been one reason, because they knew he had these people from prisoner legal services in Buffalo, where they're only 45 minutes away. One thing, right? And whether or not he has all his stuff with him, we don't know. I'm hoping to get up there this weekend and find out more information. But he also says in this first letter I got from him on the 20th, he says, as you know, they've been after me for the past several months, having the last Tier 3 report dismissed. Officer March, or Marche, I don't know how he pronounces his name, but he spells it M-A-R-C-H-E, was going to do everything he could to get a conviction. because the last time they tried to do this, saying that it was illicit, he wrote to, you know, somebody he wasn't permitted to write to or some such nonsense, which they made up, and he beat that charge. So this is the same CO is having the next hearing because now he's, you know, he's got it in for Jaleel. So afterwards, he was overheard saying, we finally got the N-word out of population, okay? So this goes right to the racism, which we know is, you know, just ridiculous. And then I got another letter from him where he sends regards to everybody. This was before he got moved. So he did file the administrative appeal, so that's in. He says, the last time in 2013, 11 days after they submitted, I was released. I expect the same thing here. They have 60 days to decide the appeals once they are received. I should be out of shoe no later than mid-late February. So he wants to increase pressure on Governor Cuomo. So, you know, we are doing a Twitter storm tomorrow to Governor Cuomo, demanding that he commute Jaleel's sentence to time served. Okay? So, that is very important, and I hope people will participate. And as I said in my email when I sent it out, if you don't tweet, call. If you can't call, write. You know, it never hurts to do everything. I don't tweet myself, but I will call and I will write. You know, so that's important. We're going to try to keep the pressure on the governor there because, you know, Jaleel, as well as having in the parole appeal for the last denial, the 9th, due, of course, to the quote-unquote nature of the crime, because they can't really say anything else, which they constantly bring up. So they're trying to hit him with this any kind of violation they can find, because that will put the kibosh on the appeal. You know, if you go up for the appeal and they say, oh, you had a Tier 3 violation, oh, no, right? So that's part of that. And to move him to Southport, he had requested, he had been told before all this started happening by his counselor at Attica that he was eligible for a preferential transfer, a preferential transfer, okay? So he had put in to come down here to Sing Sing because he wanted to earn his master's degree. He has two bachelors. He'd like to earn his master's. So then lo and behold, we get this email from Bob Boyle yesterday that he's at Southport, and that is definitely a punitive transfer. There's two places that are like the entire place is like a shoe. One is Southport. And the other is 5 points where Majid was when he died. Okay?
Well, and
so these were very nasty places.
On this, we're going to have to shorten you up on this because you can come back in later because there are big issues about the society at large that we're tackling tonight. And our
oh, I know. I've been
issue-
listening. It's really important. And
political,
this will, of course, affect our political prisoners as well. So, yes, it's very important.
No, political prisoners. We will get back to that in a little bit, but I'm anxious to have Tom Syracuse come on and give us a synopsis of an article that he read recently. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I want to wish you all a good a new year, a healthy new year, so that you can keep up your wonderful work, that you can be truth tellers. Well, you know, I have come to the conclusion that I am really glad that Trump won this election rather than Hillary. I think that Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda put it hit the nail on the head when he said that the Democratic Party is not the lesser of the two evils. It is the more effective of the two evils. Yeah. Now, this Democratic Party has lost its credibility among a huge amount of Americans. Thank goodness. Unfortunately, Americans still have, the majority of Americans still have not come to the realization that there is no real difference between these two parties. So when they get disgusted, and they should, with, say, the Democratic Party, then they go over to the Republican Party. And then when they get disgusted with the Republican Party, they go back to the Democratic Party. And so I hope that now that the Democratic Party has lost credibility among millions and millions of Americans, that the public will begin to realize that the Republican Party will have no credibility either. Now, I hear a lot of talk about the Obama legacy. It really turns my stomach. Mm-hmm. What is the legacy of Obama? Now, a lot of people say, well, listen, he really wanted to do a good job, but the Republicans blocked him. That's an out-and-out lie. A president does have some power, although he does not run this country. That's run by the Wall Street bankers and CEOs. That's who runs this country. But a president, he can commute sentences. He can commute the he can pardon political prisoners. And what did he doesn't need to go through Congress for this. And what has Obama done regarding political prisoners? Not a one. He could have closed Guantanamo. Did he do this in the 8 years? No, he didn't. I can go on and on. What is the legacy of Obama, say, in our foreign policy? It is a complete failure, and our foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East, has caused the worst refugee problem since World War II. Hundreds of thousands of hapless people from countries that we have destroyed, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, they are risking their lives and fleeing into Europe, and that in itself is causing a huge problem. That's the Obama legacy in our foreign policy. Not to mention his foreign policy toward China and Russia, surrounding Russia with all of these NATO bases, arming these countries on the Russian border to the teeth with all kinds of weaponry, provoking both China and Russia. Let's go to his legacy with domestic policy. His education program, as Betty pointed out, what is his education program? He is destroying public education by supporting these privatized charter schools. What about his energy policy? He's going full blast with these pipelines and gas and oil drilling and supporting nuclear energy, the most dangerous source of energy of all of them. And so what has he done about the job program? Well, he claims that we have a low unemployment, but we know that that's all false because they don't count people who used to have full-time jobs with halfway decent salaries that are now working part-time and have to apply for food stamps in order to just to get along. They are not counting people who no longer are even on the rolls of the unemployed. Who knows what the unemployment rate is in this country? Certainly, I would say that it all in all, it probably is over 10%, and in communities of color, it's probably twice that. So that's the Obama legacy. I can go on. Oh, the health care system. Oh, God. I mean, here we have a health care system that's run by the private insurance industry.
Yeah.
And so that is the Obama legacy. And the whole thing is a joke. Now, the problem is that people are so afraid of this Trump. They're saying that Trump is going to bring fascism to America. Fascism came to America in 1789 with the adoption of the Constitution. And it has been alive and well ever since. And certainly the Democratic Party laid the foundations over the last many administrations during the 20th century for this new type of fascism that Trump seems to want to inaugurate. So that's the legacy of the Obama administration. And let me go one step further. Supposing we didn't have term limits for the presidency and Obama was allowed to run again as president, and he would be running, say, against Trump. Guess what? I think it still would be better off if Trump won against Obama, because Obama and the Democratic politicians, Schumer and Cuomo and all of these phonies, they have a way of talking so slickly, in such a diplomatic way, which is Obama's doing that as we speak right now on TV, giving his farewell address,
yes,
that people tend to say, wow, this guy really sounds good. Trump doesn't have that. Trump, he doesn't know how to talk. So he's Obama, as I said to you in previous programs, he's nothing more than a wolf in sheep's clothing, and people get confused very easily. While Trump is just a plain old wolf, he doesn't wear sheep's clothing. And it's much better that we have a Trump, because now people will begin to wake up. They are waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Black Lives Matter, the indigenous population, what's happening in many parts of the United States, they are waking up. Power to the people. That's what's going to change this country. Not these phony politicians, whether they're Democrats hiding under the veneer of this phony liberalism or Republicans hiding under the veneer of a phony populism.
You hit the nail on the head, Tom. And what we have is, as Lynn said, a target, because Obama has put us to sleep. And we're coming out of our sleep of 8 years, hopefully. And I'm going to now turn to Tariq. Are you on the line? And Joel, hang in there. Okay, Tariq, give us what your thoughts are.
Tariq is here.
Hey, Tariq. Go ahead.
Please, Brother Ralph. Sister Nan Stewart, I want to say we hear you. I am Tariq, as you know. I am a Black Panther. I am a former Black Liberation Army prisoner of war.
You're breaking up.
I can't hear you too well, Tariq.
As I said before, we live in a bipolar world. On one
Tariq,
hand, 1%,
we
on
have
other,
a problem. We're going to have to go to Joel. We can't hear you.
Tariq, you're breaking up.
Pointed out that Mumia will be getting this treatment, and that is, as you say, the result of the work of our legal warriors. And they was being led by Brother Bob and all other legal warriors. So they have done a good job by staying the course and continuing to fight. They've done well. Ralph, you started talking about our ungovernable, the government being ungovernable, that's very true. But also, before I get to that, let me speak about Judith Clark and her being recommended for a sentence reduction, I think, by Governor Cuomo. Some years ago, I was upstate on the Sunyetta Sadiq show, and I spoke about Judith Clark, David Gilbert, and the others, because that was a joint task force between the Black Liberation Army and persons from the Weather Underground, which was Judith Clark, David Gilbert, and the others. And I pointed out on that show that Judith Clark and the others, they were fighting to stop America from killing people, really. They were fighting to stop America from carrying out oppression against American people. And we have to know, and I pointed out back then, that the government of the United States is really a killing machine. You know, and if we go over the history of the government of the United States, we will see and come to realize that America is a bloody killing machine. And what a couple of cases come to mind, I recall that a lot of people don't know, like in the United States itself, America, the government, carry out a lot of killing by using mentally challenged people. And us revolutionaries, we just experienced almost a whole family being killed by a mentally challenged person. And I believe that happened as a result of the government embedding this mentally challenged person in the social circle of this revolutionary family. And this person then got in there and flipped, found some reason that he felt very offended by, and flipped out on the family and killed almost the whole family. You know, I think that was the result of the government. Then I could talk about the case of the movie that was made about Bush, and one of the stars in the movie was killed by a mentally challenged person. Then I could talk about the government carrying out genocide against Black people. I remember just a few years back when the borough president before Eric Adams, he and a number of Black doctors did a press conference, and they pointed out that numerous Black persons were dying unnecessarily because of the different treatment regimen that was being carried out on Black people. But I think that different treatment regimen was being done at the behest of the government, the CIA. You know, I don't think that all of these doctors was doing it on their own, but the government of the United States is a very bloody government, and they should be stopped. So I pointed out on that program years ago that Judith Clark and them, they were doing a very good thing. And actually, those police were fighting to continue the bloody rampage that constitute what America is about. And those persons, the legal authorities, they are on the wrong side. And Judith Clark is on the right side of history and on the right side of the people. So that's what I feel about Judith Clark, and I hope that when she goes up for parole, I hope she's immediately given parole, you know. Also, I want to speak about Mr. Quinn for a minute. One of the things that Julio was doing in his training program was to teach African prisoners to, again, develop a positive appreciation for things that are African, and the authorities know that is a very significant development, because they want us Black people to have, and all people who know about Black people, to have a very diminished negative regard for anything that's African. And once we Black people are saddled with that negative regard, then we will behave in a negative way, and we will behave in a way that's not to our best interest. So that Jaleel was doing a very good thing by teaching the people to develop a positive regard for things that are African. And also, I hope that he was in the process of humanizing those persons too. That's something the Black Panthers didn't do back during their political education class. They didn't rehumanize people, because the authorities in their training venues, and their training venues is prison, and then the other training venue is the military and schools, and the thing that they teach people is to not be human beings. Human beings are living entities that regard themselves as intelligent, courageous, decisive, and they think of themselves as human beings, the most valuable entity in the world. So the authorities, they extinguish that in human beings. So I hope that Jaleel was also addressing that. But I'm sure that the authorities found it highly offensive and violative that Jaleel was just teaching them to develop a positive regard for things that are African. On the question of the government being more and more ungovernable, and we must say that it's being more and more ungovernable by a certain group of people, and that is us 99%. And the 1% is making it very clear that the people who run the government are going to be persons that are not the persons that lean towards the 99%. And these people are basically billionaires and millionaires, and so they're being very clear about that. And in regard to the question of hacking, you know, the authorities are making a big deal about hacking, but the matter is, in terms of spying conducted by boots on the ground, that is a practice that has long ago been abandoned. And since that practice has been abandoned, the various governments have taken to using electronic surveillance. This is what they've been doing for years now, since the 50s, since all these countries started putting up their satellites. They've mm-hmm. been able to conduct electronic surveillance, and they have taken all their spies out. And so this is something that has been going on since the 50s. Why are they making a big deal of it now? The only thing I could say is they're trying to convince the American people that the Russians are initiating attacks against them, and the American government are persons who are undeserving of being attacked, and they are being attacked for no reason at all. That's what the Panthers used to say about the police. They masquerade as the victims of an unprovoked attack, and that seems to be what the government is doing, is saying that we are not doing anything, but these Russians keep attacking us, and they may be doing that for something they intend to do down the line, because there's no real reason why they should be talking about this thing of hacking and making a big deal. Every day we get news reports about the latest on the hacking situation. That's a non-news item, you know. So so now we have Obama is going out and Trump is going in, but we have a situation where really nothing has changed, because Obama was put in by the 1%, and Trump is being put in by the 1%. So the 1% is a constant factor, and the variables is nothing. You know, they put Obama in there because they wanted him to serve a certain purpose. You know, they couldn't do that as staunch capitalists. They couldn't do the fascists didn't want to do what they made Obama do, and that is to bail out Wall Street, General Motors, and address the matter of the mortgage failure issue. Because under capitalism, if a business entity is going under, they.
I had to cut you off, Tariq. You made a point very clearly there, and what the American people should be concerned about is America spying on us, and this is why they're so angry with WikiLeaks those other, what do we call them, the truth tellers, those who tell us what's really going on. Joe, are you in the house? Joe.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. What information do you have for us this evening?
Yeah, well, first, I want to make a certain point. Just from following the various models of history, and that is that, for example, when the Nazis came to power in Germany, for a while they continued the basic structure of the Weimar Republic, although there was a great deal of physical attacks and murders and assassinations of all of the progressive German people. But then only a few weeks after they came to power, there was something called the Reichstag fire. The Reichstag in Germany is like the equivalent of the Capitol building. In other words, it housed their parliament. And that fire was blamed on the opponents of Nazism. And the day after that fire, they issued new decrees that closed down all civil liberties, that outlawed parties, that any other party in Nazi Germany, and made the Nazi Party the only legal party, and then they began opening up the political concentration camps, beginning with Dachau, which was a new thing, and it totally closed down any trace of the right to oppose the government legally in Germany, and we know the consequences. And some of the radical parties, left-wing parties, tried to put a more favorable face on it. They said, well, they're going to goof up so badly, and they're going to oppress the people so badly that the next election, it'll be our turn. And guess what? After the Reichstag fire, it was clear there wasn't going to be a next election until, I believe it was in 1954, under Allied military supervision, and that's what overthrew the regime there. So I think that we have to prepare public opinion to understand these false flag and pretextual acts, which would be labeled terrorism and so on, which are then used to justify a tremendous crackdown, so that we don't get lulled again into another 9/11 hysteria with all the chosen scapegoats that people were turned against then, and which also led to years and years of wars, which we're still not out of, waged both by the Republicans and the Democrats. Now, the anti-Russian campaign is waged almost exclusively now by Democrats, although some Republicans like John McCain and Lindsey Graham have also chimed in most vociferously. But it's essentially the opposition to Trump is that they claim that he's not aggressive enough, not with the rest of the world, but with regard to Russia in particular. And they've tried to, and so far he's stuck to the idea that the United States should get along with Russia so that we could go up against the rest of the world. Well, one of the things that he's done, he's appointed an ambassador to Israel who even to Netanyahu type public opinion considers a lunatic. He's against any two-state solution. He doesn't represent the peoplehood of the Palestinian people. He says that the West Bank and Gaza should be annexed, and that anything that's done to any of the other countries in the Middle East is part of a legitimate defense of the Zionist state. And the Republican Party platform also eliminated the idea of any two-state solution, so that also shows that while he says we shouldn't go to war with Russia, he's trying to go to war in other parts of the world. And his appeal basically, even though granted there's no difference,
Joel,
in the system, so that yes.
Cool. We're going to have to cut you off because we have an appeal from Reverend Pinckney that we're going to listen to.
All right.
From prison.
My name is Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan. I'm in prison or in a concentration camp in Muskegon, Michigan. The Nazi Germans, America. I was convicted with absolutely no evidence, no witness, no confession, no crime scene by an all-white jury that was motivated by something other than the truth. The prosecutor myself had told the jury, you can still convict Reverend Edward Pinckney with no evidence. The judge also echoed the same thing. I was given the death penalty for a 68-year-old man, 30 months in the prison system with absolutely no evidence. I have already served 25 months as a result of a Jim Crow trial that had me accused of altering dates on a recall petition against Dan Bittenhauer corrupt mayor James Hightower. The prosecutor and judge both instructed the jury they could still convict me with no evidence. Indeed, there was no evidence. I am an innocent man, threatened, charged, tried not to out and says in the effort to isolate and silence me against the power of the land grabbing, job outsourcing, blood sucking, criminal Whirlpool Corporation that has its headquarters in Benton Harbor, Michigan. On September the 7th, 2016, the Michigan Court of Appeal denied me bond while accepting my application for leave. It would take up to a year for the Supreme Court to reach its decision on my appeal. The corruption inside the courtroom and justice system today must stop. The Court of Appeal decision is published. It sets a dangerous precedent for the people of the state of Michigan and around the country. The decision indicated that there is sufficient evidence to convict even when there is absolutely no evidence at all. Judge Kelly, Judge O'Brien, and Judge Hood of the Court of Appeal all stated Reverend Edward Pinckney must have told somebody to alter the dates on the petition with absolutely no evidence to support this ridiculous claim. The prosecutor's case rested on the idea that since I was an outspoken organizer, active in political and social matters, I must have been motivated to alter the dates. The prosecutor offered no witness, no confession, no...
Well, thank you for
no
that.
Of guilt or even of crime was...
Reverend Pink, this was the precursor to the Flint, Michigan water debacle. Reverend Pinckney told us about it because he was fighting over...
Say them loud, say them clear, Father.